accept. Well, some time before his death, Honor stopped creating Honor Spren. We don't know why, but he asked the Stormfather to do it instead.
He was setting up an heir. I've heard that the Stormfather is a kind of image of the Almighty.
More like a weak shadow, Notam said. You actually understand this?
Understand? No. Follow? Mostly.
The Stormfather created only a handful of children. All of these, save Silfrenna, were destroyed in the Recreants, becoming Deadeyes. This loss stung the Stormfather, who didn't create again for centuries. When he was finally moved to remake the Honor Spren, he created only 10 more. My great-grandmother was among them. She created my grandfather, who created my father, who eventually created me. It was only recently, even by your reckoning, that the ancient daughter was rediscovered. Asleep. So in answer to your question, yes, Silfrenna is both old and young. Old of form, but young of mind. She is not ready to deal with humans, and certainly not ready for a bond. I wouldn't trust myself with one of those.
You think we're too changeable, don't you? That we can't keep our oaths?
I'm no high spren, the captain spat. I can see that the variety of humankind is what gives you strength. Your ability to change your minds, to go against what you once thought, can be a great advantage. But your bond is dangerous without honor. There will not be enough checks upon your power. You risk disaster.
How? Notam shook his head, then looked away, off into the distance.
I cannot answer. You should not have bonded Silfrenna either way. She is too precious to the Stormfather.
Regardless, Kaladin said, you're about half a year too late, so you might as well accept it.
Not too late. Killing you would free her, though it would be painful for her. There are other ways, at least until the final ideal is sworn.
I can't imagine you'd be willing to kill a man for this, Kaladin said. Tell me truthfully, is there honor in that, Notam? He looked away as if ashamed.
You know Syl shouldn't be locked away like this, Kaladin said softly. You're an honor spren too, Notam. You must know how she feels.
The captain didn't speak. Finally, Kaladin gritted his teeth and strode off. The captain didn't demand that Kaladin go down below, so he took up a position at the very front of the high deck, hanging out over the bow. With one hand on the flagpole, Kaladin rested a boot on the low railing overlooking the sea of beads. He wore his uniform today, since he'd been able to wash it the previous night. Honor's Path had good accommodations for humans, including a device that made a great deal of water. The design, if not the vessel itself, probably stretched back centuries to when Radiance traveled Shadesmar with their spren. Beneath him, the ship creaked as sailors shifted her heading. To the left, he could see land. Longbrow's Straits, on the other side of which they'd find Thalen City, tantalizingly close. Technically, he was no longer Dalinar's bodyguard, but storms during the Weeping, Kaladin had nearly abandoned his duty. The thought of Dalinar needing him now, while Kaladin was trapped and unable to help, brought a pain that was almost physical. He'd failed so many people in his life. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination. Together these words formed the first ideal of the Windrunners. He'd said them, but he wasn't certain he understood them. The second ideal made more direct sense. I will protect those who cannot protect themselves. Straightforward, yes, but overwhelming. The world was a place of suffering. Was he really supposed to try to prevent it all? I will protect even those I hate, so long as it is right. The third ideal meant standing up for anyone, if needed. But who decided what was right? Which side was he supposed to protect? The fourth ideal was unknown to him, but the closer he drew to it, the more frightened he became. What would it demand of him? Something crystallized in the air beside him, a line of light like a pinprick in the air that trailed a long, soft luminescence. A mist-spren sailor near him gasped, then nudged his companion. She whispered something in awe, then both scrambled away.
"What have I done now?"
A second pinprick of light appeared near him, spinning, coordinated with the other. They made spiral trails in the air. He'd have called them Spren, but they weren't any he'd seen before. Besides, Spren on this side didn't seem to vanish and appear. They were always here, weren't they?
Kaladin?
A voice whispered in his head.
Syl?
He whispered.
What are you doing?
It was rare that he heard her directly in his mind.
Standing on the deck. What's happened?
Nothing. I can just feel your mind right now. Stronger than usual. They let you out?
Yes. I've tried to get them to set you free.
They're stubborn. It's an honor Spren trait which I, fortunately, escaped.
Syl, what is the fourth ideal?
You know you have to figure that out on your own, silly.
It's going to be hard, isn't it?
Yes. You're close.
He leaned forward, watching the mandras float beneath them. A small flock of glory Spren zipped past. They took a moment to fly up and spin about him before heading to the south, faster than the ship. The strange pinpricks of light continued to whirl around him. Sailors gathered behind, making a ruckus until the captain pushed through and gaped.
"What are they?"
Kaladin asked, nodding toward the pinpricks of light.
"Wind Spren."
"Oh." They did remind him a little of the way Wind Spren would fly on gusts of wind.
"They're common. Why is everyone so upset?"
"They're not common on this side," the captain said. "They live on your side. Almost completely. I've never seen them before. They're beautiful."
"Perhaps I haven't been giving Notaman enough credit," Kaladin thought. "Perhaps he would listen to a different kind of plea."
"Captain," Kaladin said, "I have taken an oath as a Windrunner to protect, and the bondsmith who leads us is in danger."
"Bondsmith?"
the captain said.
"Which one?"
"Dalinar Kholin."
"No. Which bondsmith of the three?"
"I don't know what you mean," Kaladin said, "but his Spren is the Stormfather. I told you I'd spoken to him."
It seemed, from the captain's aghast expression, that perhaps Kaladin should have mentioned this fact earlier.
"I must keep my oath," Kaladin said. "I need you to let Syl go, then take us to a place where we can transfer between realms."
"I've sworn an oath myself," the captain said, "to honor and to the truths we follow."
"Honor is dead," Kaladin said, "but the bondsmith is not. You say that you can see how human variety gives us strength? Well, I challenge you to do the same. See beyond the letter of your rules. You must understand that my need to defend the bondsmith is more important than your need to deliver Syl, especially considering that the Stormfather is well aware of her location."
The captain glanced at the Windspren, which were still spinning about Kaladin, leaving trails that drifted the entire length of the ship before fading.
"I will consider," the captain said.
Adolin stopped at the top of the steps just behind Shallan. Kaladin, a storming bridgeman, stood at the bow of the ship surrounded by glowing lines of light. They illuminated his heroic figure, determined, undaunted, one hand on the prow's flagpole, wearing his crisp wall-guard uniform. The ship's Spren gazed upon him as if he were a storming herald come to announce the reclamation of the Tranquiline Halls. Just ahead of him, Shallan seemed to change. It was in her bearing, the way she stopped resting lightly on one foot and stood solidly on 2 feet instead, the way her posture shifted, and the way that she seemed to melt upon seeing Kaladin, lips rising to a grin. Blushing, she adopted a fond, even eager, expression. Adolin breathed out slowly. He'd caught those glimpses from her before and seen the sketches of Kaladin in her book. But looking at her now, he couldn't deny what he was seeing. She was practically leering,
I need to draw that,
she said. But she just stood there instead, staring at him. Adolin sighed and made his way up onto the high deck. Seemed they weren't forbidden here any longer. He joined Pattern, who had come up another set of steps, and was humming happily to himself.
Kind of hard to compete with that, Adolin noted.
Pattern said.
You know, I've never really felt like this before. It's not just Kaladin, it's all of this, and what's happening to us.
He shook his head.
We certainly are an odd bunch.
Yes, seven people. Odd.
It's not like I can blame him. It's not as if he's trying to be like he is.
Nearby, a sailor, Spren, one of the few who hadn't gathered around Stormblessed and his halo of glowing lights, lowered a spyglass. She frowned, then raised it again. Then she began to call out in the Spren language. People tore themselves away from Kaladin and crowded around. Adolin stepped back, watching until Kaladin and Shallan joined him. Azure crested the steps nearby, looking concerned.
What is it? Kaladin asked.
No idea, Adolin said.
The captain waved for the Mist Spren and Honor Spren to make space, then took the spyglass. He finally lowered it and looked back at Kaladin.
You were right, human. When you said you might be followed,
he waved Kaladin and Adolin forward.
Look low on the horizon at 210 degrees.
Kaladin looked through the spyglass, then breathed out. He extended it toward Adolin, but Shallan snatched it first.
Storms, she said. There's at least six of them.
Eight, my scout says, the captain replied.
Adolin finally got his turn. Because of the black sky, it took him forever to spot the distant specks flying toward the ship. The Fused. 109. Neshua Kadal.
Reshafir, the Midnight Mother, is another unmade who appears to have been destroyed at Ahariyetiam. From Hesse's Mythica, page 250.
Dalinar ran his fingers along a line of red crystal embedded in the stone wall. The little vein started at the ceiling and wound all the way down the wall, within the pattern of the light green and gray strata, to the floor. It was smooth to the touch, distinct in texture from the rock around it. He rubbed his thumb across the crystal.
It's like the other strata lines ripple out from this one, getting wider as they move away from it.
What does it mean?
He asked Navani. The two of them stood in a storage room near the top of the tower.
I don't know, Navani said, but we're finding more and more of them. What do you know of essential theology?
A thing for ardents and scribes, he said.
And soul casters? That is a garnet.
Garnet? Let's see.
Emeralds for grain, that was the most important, and heliodores for flesh. They raised animals for their gem hearts to provide those two. He was pretty sure diamonds made quartz and storms. He didn't know much about the others. Topaz made stone. They'd needed those for the bunkers on the shattered plains.
Garnets make blood, Navani said. We don't have any soul casters that use them.
Blood? That sounds useless.
Well, scientifically, we think soulcasters were able to use garnets to make any liquid that was soluble in water as opposed to oil-based. Your eyes are crossing.
Sorry.
He felt at the crystals.
Another mystery. When will we find answers?
The records below, Navani said, speak of this tower like a living thing, with a heart of emerald and ruby, and now these veins of garnet.
He stood up, looking around the darkened room, which held the monarch's chairs between meetings. It was lit by a sphere he'd set on a stone ledge by the door.
If this tower was alive, Dalinar said, then it's dead now.
Or sleeping. But if that's the case, I have no idea how to wake it. We've tried infusing the heart like a fabrial, even had Renarin try to push Stormlight into it. Nothing's worked.
Dalinar picked up a chair, then pushed the door open. He held the door with his foot, shooing away a guard who tried to do it for him, while Navani collected the sphere and joined him in the conference room in front of the glass wall looking toward the origin. He set down the chair and checked his forearm clock. Stupid thing. He was growing far too dependent upon it. The arm device had a pain reel in it, too, a kind of fab reel with a spren that feasted upon pain. He'd never yet remembered to use the thing. 12 minutes left. Assuming Elthabar's calculations were correct. With span reads confirming the storm's arrival hours before in the east, the calculations were down to judging the speed of the storm. A runner arrived at the door. Creer, the duty sergeant for guards today, accepted it. He was a bridgeman from Bridge 20, was it? He and his brother were both guards, though Creer wore spectacles, unlike his twin. "Message from Brightness Kahl, sir," Creer said, handing the note to Navani. It looked like it had come from a span reed. It had marks on the sides from the clips that had held it to the board, and the tight letters covered only the center of the page.
"From Fenn," Navani said. "A merchant ship vanished in the southern depths this morning, just off Marat. They went ashore at what they hoped was a safe distance to use the span reed, and reported a large number of ships at dock along the coast. Glowing figures rose from a nearby city and descended upon them, and the communication cut off."
"Confirmation," Dalinar said, "that the enemy is building up a navy. If that fleet launched from Marat before his own ships were ready, or if the winds were wrong when his armada did launch." "Have Teshev write back to the Thalens," Dalinar said. "Suggest to Queen Fenn and our other allies that we hold the next meeting in Thalen City. We'll want to inspect fortifications and shore up the ground defenses." He sent the guards to wait outside, then approached the window and checked his wrist clock. Just a few minutes left. He thought he could see the storm wall below, but it was difficult to be sure from this height. He wasn't accustomed to looking down on a high storm.
"Are you sure you want to do this?" Navani asked.
"The Stormfather asked me something similar this morning. I asked him if he knew the first rule of warfare."
"Is that the one about terrain, or the one about attacking where the enemy is weak?"
He could pick it out now, a dark ripple surging through the sky below.
"Neither," Dalinar said.
"Ah, right," Navani said. "I should have guessed."
She was nervous, with good cause. It was the first time he'd stepped back into the visions since meeting Odium. But Dalinar felt blind in this war. He didn't know what the enemy wanted or how they intended to exploit their conquests. "The first rule of war, know your enemy." He raised his chin as the storm slammed into Urethiru, roughly at the height of its third tier. All went white. Then Dalinar appeared in the ancient palace, the large open room with sandstone pillars and a balcony that looked out on an antiquated version of Kolinar. Noadon strode through the center of the pillared chamber. This was the youthful Noadon, not the elderly version from his recent dream. Dalinar had taken the place of a guardsman near the doors. A slender Parshendi woman appeared beside the king in the spot Dalinar had occupied so long ago. Her skin was marbled red and white in a complex pattern, and she had long orange-red hair. She looked down with red eyes, surprised by her sudden appearance and the robes she wore, those of an advisor to the king. Noadon began speaking to her as if she were his friend Karm.
"I don't know what to do, old friend."
"Odium sees that a vision has begun," the Stormfather warned Dalinar. "The enemy is focusing on us. He comes.
Can you hold him back?"
"I am but a shadow of a god. His power vastly outstrips my own."
He sounded smaller than Dalinar was accustomed to. Like the quintessential bully, the Stormfather didn't know how to face someone stronger than himself.
"Can you hold him back? I need time to talk to her."
"I will try."
"Good enough." Unfortunately, it meant that Dalinar didn't have time to let this Parshendi woman experience the vision in full. He strode toward her and Noadon.
Venli turned around. Where was she? This wasn't Murat. Had Odium summoned her again? No. It's the wrong storm. He doesn't come during high storms. A young Alethi male in robes was blathering at her. She ignored him, biting her hand to see if she could feel the pain. She could. She shook her hand and looked down at the robes she wore. This couldn't be a dream. It was too real. My friend, the Alethi man asked, are you well? I realize that events have taken their toll on us all, but... Footsteps rang loudly on the stone as another Alethi man approached, wearing a crisp blue uniform. White dusted the hair at his temples, and his face wasn't as round as other human faces. His features could almost have been those of a listener, even if that nose was wrong and the face bore far more creases than a listener's ever would. Wait, she thought, attuning curiosity. Is that... Disturbance on the battlefield, sir, the older man said to her companion. You are needed immediately. What is this? They didn't say what it was, your majesty. Only that you are urgently requested. The human king drew his lips to a tight line, and then, obviously frustrated, stalked toward the doorway. Come, he said to Venli. The older man grabbed her arm above the elbow. Don't, he said softly. We need to talk. This is the Alethi warlord. My name is Dalinar Kolin, the man said. I lead the Alethi, and you're seeing a vision of past events. Only your mind has been transported, not your body. We two are the only real people here. She yanked her arm out of his hand and attuned irritation. Why have you brought me here? I want to talk. Of course you do. Now that you're losing, now that we've seized your capital, now you want to talk. What of the years spent slaughtering my people on the shattered plains? It had been a game to them. Listener spy reports had shown the humans had enjoyed the sport on the shattered plains, claiming wealth and listener lives as part of a grand contest. We were willing to talk when you sent your emissary, Dalinar said. The Shard Bearer. I'm willing to talk again now. I want to forget old grievances, even those personal to me. Venli walked away, still attuned to irritation. How have you brought me to this place? Is this a prison? Is this your work, Odium? Testing my loyalty with a false vision of the enemy? She was using the old rhythms. She'd never been able to do that when Odium's attention had been on her. I'll send you back soon, Kolin said, catching up to her. Though he was not short for a human, her current form was a good 6 inches taller than he was. Please, just hear me out. I need to know. What would a truce between our people cost? A truce? She asked to amusement, stopping near the balcony. A truce? Peace, no desolation, no war. What would it cost? Well, for a start, it would cost your kingdom. He grimaced. His words were dead, like those of all humans, but he wore his feelings on his face. So much passion and emotion. Is that why the Spren betrayed us for them? What is Alethkar to you? He said. I can help you build a new nation on the shattered plains. I will give you laborers to raise cities, ardents to teach any skill you want, wealth as payment in ransom for Kolinar and its people, a formal apology, whatever you demand. I demand that we keep Alethkar. His face became a mask of pain, his brow furrowed. Why must you live there? To you, Alethkar is a place to conquer. But it's my homeland. She attuned reprimand. Don't you understand? The people who live there, the singers, my cousins, are from Alethkar. That is their homeland, too. The only difference between them and you is that they were born as slaves and you as their master. He winced.
Perhaps some other accommodation, then. A dividing of the kingdom? A Parshman high prince?
He seemed shocked to be considering it. She attuned resolve. Your tone implies you know that would be impossible. There can be no accommodation, human. Send me from this place. We can meet on the battlefield.
No.
He seized her arm again.
I don't know what the accommodation will be, but we can find one. Let me prove to you that I want to negotiate instead of fight.
You can start, she said to irritation, pulling away from him, by not assaulting me. She wasn't certain she could fight him, honestly. Her current body was tall but fragile, and in truth, she'd never been proficient at battle, even during the days when she'd taken an appropriate form.
At least, let us try a negotiation, he said. Please.
He didn't sound very pleading. He'd grown stern, face like a stone, glaring. With the rhythms, you could infuse your tone with the mood you wished to convey, even if your emotions weren't cooperating. Humans didn't have that tool. They were as dull as the dullest slave. A sudden thump resounded in the vision. Venli attuned anxiety and rushed out onto the balcony. A half-destroyed city stretched below, where a battle had happened, dead heaped in piles. That pounding sounded again. The air was breaking. The clouds and sky seemed to be a mural painted on an enormous dome ceiling. And as the pounds continued, a web of cracks appeared overhead. Beyond them shone a vivid yellow light. "He's here," she whispered, then waved toward it. "That's why there can't be a negotiation, human. He knows we don't need one. You want peace? Surrender. Give yourselves up and hope that he doesn't care to destroy you." A faint hope. Considering what Rhein had said to her about exterminating the humans. With the next pound, the sky fractured and a hole appeared overhead, a powerful light shining beyond. The very shards of the air, broken like a mirror, were sucked into that light. A pulse of power blasted from the hole, shaking the city with a terrible vibration. It tossed Venli to the balcony's floor. Colin reached to help her, but a second pulse caused him to fall as well. The bricks in the room's wall separated from one another and began to float apart. The boards that made up the balcony began to lift, nails floating into the sky. A guard ran to the balcony but stumbled, and his very skin started to separate into water and a dried husk. Everything just came apart. A wind rose around Venli, pulling debris toward that hole in the sky and the brilliant, terrible light beyond. Boards shredded to splinters. Bricks floated past her head. She growled, the rhythm of resolve thumping inside her as she grabbed and clung to parts of the floor that hadn't yet separated.
That burning!
She knew it well, the terrible pain of odium's heat scalding her skin, scorching her until her very bones, somehow still able to feel, became ash. It happened every time he gave her orders. What worse thing would he do if he found her fraternizing with the enemy? She attuned determination and crawled away from the light.
Escape!
She reached the chamber beyond the balcony and lurched to her feet, trying to run. The wind pulled at her, making each step a struggle. Overhead, the ceiling separated in a single magnificent burst, each brick exploding away from the others, then streaming toward the void. The pieces of the unfortunate guard rose after them. A sack, drained of grain. A puppet with no controlling hand. Venli dropped to the ground again and continued crawling, but the stones of the floor separated, floating upward with her on them. Soon she was scrambling precariously from one floating piece of stone to another. The rhythm of resolve still attuned, she dared to glance backward. The hole had widened, and the all-consuming light feasted on the streams of refuse. She turned away, desperate to do what she could to delay her own burning. Then she stopped and looked back again. Dalinar Kolin stood on the balcony, and he was glowing. Neshua Kadal, radiant knight. Without meaning to, she attuned the rhythm of awe. Around Kolin, the balcony was stable. Boards trembled and quivered at his feet, but did not move into the sky. The balcony railing had ripped apart to either side of him, but where he held to it with a firm grip, it remained secure. He was her enemy, and yet, long ago, these humans had resisted her gods. Yes, the enslavement of her cousins, the singers, was impossible to ignore. Still, the humans had fought, and had won. The listeners remembered this as a song sung to the rhythm of awe. Neshua Kadal. The calm, gentle light spread from Dalinar Kolin's hand to the railing, then down into the floor. Boards and stones sank down from the air, re-knitting. Venli's current block of stone settled back into place. All through the city, buildings burst apart and zoomed upward, but the walls of this tower returned to their positions. Venli immediately made for the steps downward. If whatever Kolin was doing stopped, she wanted to be on solid rock. She wound her way to the ground floor, then, once on the street, she positioned herself near the balcony and Kolin's influence. Above, Odium's light went out. Stones and splinters rained down on the city, crashing about her. Dried bodies dropped like discarded clothing. Venli pressed back against the tower wall, attuning anxiety, raising her arm against the dust of the debris. The hole remained in the sky, though the light was gone from behind it. Below, the rubbled remains of the city seemed a sham. No cries of fear, no moans of pain. Bodies were just husks, skins lying empty on the ground. A sudden pounding broke the air behind her, opening another hole, lower down and near the edge of the city. The sky crumbled into the gap, revealing that hateful light again. It consumed everything near it, wall, buildings, even the ground disintegrating and flowing into the maw. Dust and debris washed over Venli in a furious wind. She pressed against the stone wall, clinging to one of the balcony's supports. Terrible heat washed across her from the distant hole. Clamping her eyes shut, she tightened her grip. He could come claim her, but she would not let go. And what of the grand purpose? What of the power he offers? Did she still want those things? Or was that merely something to grasp onto now that she had brought about the end of her people? She gritted her teeth. In the distance she heard a quiet rhythm. Somehow it sounded over the roar of the wind, the clacking of dust and stones, the rhythm of anxiety? She opened her eyes and saw Timber fighting against the wind in an attempt to reach her. Bursts of light exploded from the little spren in frantic rings. Buildings crumbled along the street. The entire city was collapsing away. Even the palace broke apart, all save this one patch near the balcony. The little spren changed to the rhythm of the lost and began to slide backward. Venli shouted and released the pillar. She immediately was pushed with the wind, but although she wasn't in storm form any longer, this was a form of power. Incredibly nimble. She controlled her fall, going down on her side and skidding on the stones, feet toward the oppressive light. As she neared the little spren, Venli jammed her foot into a cleft in the street, then grabbed a crack in a broken stone, pulling herself to a halt. With her other hand, she twisted and snatched timber from the air. Touching timber felt like touching silk, being blown by a wind. As Venli folded her left hand around the spren, she felt a pulsing warmth. Timber pulsed to praise as Venli pulled her close to her breast. Great, Venli thought, lowering her head against the wind, her face against the ground, holding on to the cleft in the rock with her right hand. Now we can fall together. She had one hope, to hold on and hope that eventually... The heat faded, the wind stilled. Debris came clattering back to the ground, though the fall was less clamorous this time. Not only had the wind been pulling sideways rather than up, there simply wasn't much debris left. Venli rose, covered in dust, her face and hands cut by chips of stone. Timber pulsed softly in her hand. The city was basically gone. No more than the occasional outline of a building foundation, and the remains of the strange rock formations known as the wind blades. Even those had been weathered down to knobs 5 or 6 feet tall. The only structure in the city that remained was a quarter of the tower where Colin had been standing. Behind her was a black, gaping hole into nothingness. The ground trembled. Oh, no! Something beat against the stones underneath her. The very ground began to shake and crumble. Venli ran toward the broken palace right as everything at last fell apart. The ground, the remaining foundations, even the air seemed to disintegrate. A chasm opened beneath her, and Venli leaped, trying to reach the other side. She came up a few feet short and plummeted into the hole. Falling, she twisted in the air, reaching for the collapsing sky with one hand and clutching timber in the other. Above, the man in the blue uniform leaped into the chasm. He fell beside the hole's perimeter and stretched one hand toward Venli, his other ground against the rock wall, hand scraping the stone. Something flashed around his arm, lines of light, a framework that covered his body. His fingers didn't bleed as they scraped the stone. Around her, the rocks, the air itself became more substantial. In defiance of the heat below, Venli slowed just enough that her fingers met those of Colin. Go! She crashed to the floor of her cave back in Marat. The vision gone. Sweating, panting, she opened her left fist. To her relief, timber floated out, pulsing with a hesitant rhythm.
Dalinar dissolved into pure pain. He felt himself being ripped apart, flayed, shredded. Each piece of him removed and allowed to hurt in isolation, a punishment, a retribution, a personalized torment. He could have persisted for an eternity. Instead, blessedly, the agony faded, and he came to himself. He knelt on an endless plain of glowing white stone. Light coalesced beside him, forming into a figure dressed in gold and white, holding a short scepter.
"What were you seeing?" Odium asked, curious.
He tapped his scepter on the ground like a cane. Noadan's palace, where Dalinar had been moments before, materialized out of light beside them.
"Ah, this one again. Looking for answers from the dead?"
Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut. What a fool he had been. If there had ever been a hope of peace, he'd probably destroyed it by pulling that Parshendi woman into a vision and subjecting her to Odium's horrors.
"Dalinar... Dalinar," Odium said.
He settled down on a seat formed from light, then rested one hand on Dalinar's shoulder.
"It hurts, doesn't it?" "Yes, I know pain," I am the only god who does.
The only one who cares. Can there be peace?
Dalinar asked, his voice ragged. Speaking was hard. He'd felt himself being ripped apart in the light moments before.
Yes, Dalinar, Odium said. There can be. There will be.
After you destroy Roshar.
After you destroy it, Dalinar, I am the one who will rebuild it.
Agree to a contest between champions, Dalinar forced out. Let us find a way to...
He trailed off. How could he fight this thing? Odium patted Dalinar's shoulder.
Be strong, Dalinar. I have faith in you even when you don't have it in yourself. Though it will hurt for a time, there is an end. Peace is in your future. Push through the agony. Then you will be victorious, my son.
The vision faded, and Dalinar found himself back in the upper room of Urethiru. He collapsed into the seat he'd placed there, Navani taking his arm, concerned. Through his bond, Dalinar sensed weeping. The Stormfather had kept Odium back, but storms he had paid a price. The most powerful spren on Roshar, embodiment of the tempest that shaped all life, was crying like a child, whispering that Odium was too strong.
110. A Million Stars. The Midnight Mother created monsters of shadow and oil, dark imitations of creatures she saw or consumed. Their description matches no spren I can find in modern literature. From Hesse's Mythica, page 252. Captain Notam gave the command, and two of the sailors unlatched a section of the hull, exposing the crashing waves of beads just beyond. Shallan put her free hand on the frame of the open cargo door and leaned out over the churning depths. Adolin tried to tug her back, but she remained in place. She'd chosen to wear Vale's outfit today, in part for the pockets. She carried three larger gemstones. Kaladin carried four others. Their bromes had all run out of stormlight. Even these larger unset gems were getting close to failing. Hopefully they would last long enough to get them to Thalen City and the Oath Gate. Beyond the waves, so close that the sailors feared hidden rocks beneath the beads, a dark landscape interrupted the horizon. The inverse of Longbrow's Straits, a place where trees grew tall, forming a black jungle of glass plants. A sailor clomped down the steps into the hold and barked something at Captain Notam. "Your enemies are close now," the captain translated. Honor's Path had made a heroic effort these last few hours, pushing its mandras to exhaustion, and it hadn't been nearly enough. The fused were slower than Kaladin could go, but they were still far faster than the ship. Shallan looked at the captain. His bearded face, which glowed with a soft phantom light, betrayed nothing of what must have been a powerful conflict for him. Turn over the captives to the enemy and perhaps save his crew? Or set them free and hope the ancient daughter could escape? A door at the back of the hold opened, and Kaladin led Syl from her cabin. The captain had only now given permission to release her, as if wishing to delay the decision until the last possible moment. Syl's color seemed muted, and she clung to Kaladin's arm, unsteady. Was she going to be able to make it to shore with them? She's a spren. She doesn't need air. She'll be fine. Hopefully.
Go then, the captain said, and be swift. I cannot promise that my crew once captured will be able to keep this secret for long.
Apparently it was difficult to kill spren, but hurting them was quite easy. Another sailor released Adolin's sword spren from her cabin. She didn't look as weathered as Syl. One place seemed as good as another to her. Kaladin led Syl over.
ancient daughter, the captain said, bowing his head.
Won't meet my eyes, Notam? Syl said. I suppose locking me away here isn't too different from all those days you spent running about at father's whims back home.
He didn't reply, but instead turned away. With Syl and the Deadeye joining them, that only left one person. Azure lounged by the steps, wearing her breastplate and cloak, arms folded.
You sure you won't change your mind? Shallan asked.
Azure shook her head.
Azure, Kaladin said, I was too harsh earlier. That doesn't mean I...
It's not that, she said. I simply have a different thread to chase. And besides, I left my men to fight these monsters in Kulinar. Doesn't feel right to do the same again. She smiled. Don't fear for me, Stormblessed. You will have a much better chance if I stay here, as will these sailors. When you boys next meet the swordsman who taught you that morning kata, warn him that I'm looking for him.
Zael? Adolin said. You know Zael?
We're old friends, she said. Notam, have your sailors been cutting those bales of cloth into the shapes I requested?
Yes, the captain said. But I don't understand.
You soon will. She gave Kaladin a lazy salute. He returned it, sharper. Then she nodded to them and walked up toward the main deck. The ship crashed through a large wave of beads, sending some through the open cargo deck doors. Sailors with brooms started brushing them back toward the opening.
Are you going? The captain said to Shallan. Every moment you delay increases the danger to us all.
He still wouldn't look at Syl. Right, Shallan thought. Well, someone had to start the party. She took Adolin by one hand and Pattern by the other. Kaladin linked hands with Pattern and Syl, and Adolin grabbed his spren. They crowded into the opening into the cargo hold, looking at the glass beads below, churning, catching the light of a distant sun, sparkling like a million stars.
All right, she said. Jump!
Shallan threw herself off the ship, joined by the others. She crashed into the beads, which swallowed her. They seemed to slip too easily into them. Like before, when she'd fallen into this ocean, it felt like something was pulling her down. She sank into the beads, which rolled against her skin, overwhelming her senses with thoughts of trees and rocks. She fought the sensations, struggling to keep herself from thrashing too much. She clung to Adolin, but Pattern's hand was pulled from her grip.
I can't do this. I can't let them claim me. I can't...
They hit the bottom, which was shallow here near the shore. Then Shallan finally let herself draw in Stormlight, one precious gemstone's worth. It sustained her, calmed her. She fished in her pocket for the bead she'd picked from the bucket earlier. When she fed the bead Stormlight, the other beads around her trembled, then pulled back, forming the walls and ceiling of a small room. The Stormlight curling from her skin illuminated the space with a faint glow. Adolin let go of her hand and fell to his knees, coughing and gasping. His Deadeye just stood there as always.
Damnation, Adolin said, wheezing. Drowning with no water. It shouldn't be so hard, should it? All we had to do was hold our breath.
Shallan stepped to the side of the room, listening. Yes, it was almost like she could hear the beads whispering to her beneath their clattering. She plunged her hand through the wall, and her fingers brushed cloth. She grabbed hold, and a moment later, Kaladin seized her arm and pulled himself into the room made from beads, stumbling and falling to his knees. He wasn't glowing.
You didn't use a gemstone? Shallan asked.
Almost had to, he said.
He took a few deep breaths, then stood up.
But we need to conserve those, he turned around. Syl?
A disturbance at the other side of the chamber announced someone approaching. Whoever it wasn't able to get in until Shallan walked over and broke the surface of the bead wall with her hand. Pattern entered and looked around the room, humming happily.
Mmm,
A nice pattern, Shallan.
Syl, Kaladin repeated. We jumped hand in hand, but she let go. Where
she'll be fine, Shallan said. Pattern agreed. Spren need no air.
Kaladin took a deep breath, then nodded. He started pacing anyway, so Shallan settled down on the ground to wait, pack in her lap. They each carried a change of clothing, 3 water jugs, and some of the food Adolin had purchased. Hopefully it would be enough to reach Thalen City. Then she'd have to make the Oathgate work. They waited as long as they dared, hoping the fuse had passed them by, chasing the ship. Finally, Shallan stood up and pointed. That way.
You sure?
Kaladin asked.
Yes, even the slope agrees.
She kicked at the obsidian ground, which ran at a gentle incline.
Right, Adolin said. Lock hands.
They did so, and, heart fluttering, Shallan recovered the stormlight from her shell of a room. Beads came crashing down, enveloping her. They started up the slope, against the tide of beads. It was more difficult than she'd imagined. The current of the shifting beads seemed determined to hold them back. Still, she had stormlight to sustain her. They soon reached a place where the ground was too steep to walk on easily. Shallan let go of the men's hands and scrambled up the incline. A moment after her head broke the surface, Syl appeared on the bank, reaching down and helping Shallan up the last few feet. Beads rolled off her clothing, clattering against the ground, as the others pulled themselves onto the shore.
I saw the enemy fly past, Syl said. I was hiding by the trees here.
At her urging, they entered the forest of glass plants before settling down to recover from their escape. Shallan immediately felt herself itching for her sketch pad. These trees! The trunks were translucent. The leaves looked like they were blown from glass in a multitude of colors. Moss drooped from one branch like melted green glass, strands hanging down in silky lines. When she touched them, they broke off. Overhead, the clouds rippled with the mother-of-pearl iridescence that marked another high storm in the real world. Shallan could barely see it through the canopy, but the effect on Pattern and Syl was immediate. They stood up straighter, and Syl's wan color brightened to a healthy blue-white. Pattern's head shifted more quickly, spinning through a dozen different cycles in a matter of minutes. Stormlight still trailed from Shallan's skin. She'd taken in a rather large amount of it, but hadn't lost too much. She returned it to the gemstone, a process she didn't quite understand, but which felt natural at the same time. Nearby, Syl looked to the southwest with a kind of wistful, far-off expression.
Syl? Shallan asked. There's a storm that way, too, she whispered,
then shook herself and seemed embarrassed. Kaladin dug out 2 gemstones.
All right, he said. We fly.
They decided to use 2 gemstones worth of stormlight to fly inward, a gamble to get a head start on their hike and to get away from the coast. Hopefully the fused wouldn't treat the honor spren too harshly. Shallan worried for them, but equally for what would happen if the fused doubled back to search for her group. A short flight now should deposit them far enough inland that they'd be tough to locate. Once they landed, they would hike across several days' worth of Shadesmar landscape before reaching the island of Thalena, which would manifest as a lake here. Thalen City and its Oathgate were on the very rim of that lake. Kaladin lashed them one at a time, and fortunately his arts worked on the spren as they did humans. They took to the air and started the last leg of their journey.
111. Aayla Steely. It will not take a careful reader to ascertain I have listed only 8 of the unmade here. Lore is confident there were 9, an unholy number, asymmetrical and often associated with the enemy. From Hesse's Mythica, page 266. Dalinar stepped out of the Oathgate control building into Thalen City and was met by the man he most wanted to punch in all Roshar. Meridas Amaram stood straight in his House Sadeus uniform, clean-shaven, narrow-faced, square-jawed. Tall, orderly, with shining buttons and a sharp posture, he was the very image of a perfect Alethi officer. "Report," Dalinar said, hopefully keeping the dislike out of his voice. Amaram, Sadeus, fell into step with Dalinar, and they walked to the edge of the Oathgate platform overlooking the city. Dalinar's guards gave them space to converse.
"Our crews have done wonders for this city, Bright Lord," Amaram said. "We focused our initial attentions on the debris outside the walls. I worried that would give an invading force too much cover, not to mention rubble to construct a ramp up to the wall."
Indeed, the plain before the city walls, which had once housed the markets and warehouses of the docks, was completely clear. A killing field, interrupted by the occasional outline of a broken foundation. The Almighty only knew how the Thalen military had allowed a collection of buildings outside the walls in the first place. That would have been a nightmare to defend.
"We shored up positions where the wall was weakened," Amaram continued, gesturing. "It's not high by Kolinar standards, but it is an impressive fortification nonetheless. We cleared out the buildings right inside to provide staging and resource dumps, and my army is camped there. We then helped with general reconstruction."
"The city looks far better," Dalinar said. "Your men did well."
"Then maybe our penance can be over," Amaram said.
He said it straight, though anger spread, a pool of boiling blood spread from beneath his right foot.
"Your work here was important, soldier. You didn't only rebuild a city, you built the trust of the Thalen people."
"Of course,"
Amaram added, more softly.
"And I do see the tactical importance of knowing the enemy fortifications."
"You fool."
"The Thalens are not our enemies."
"I misspoke," Amaram said. "Yet I cannot ignore that the Kolin troops have been deployed to the border between our kingdom and Yakaved. Your men got to liberate our homeland while mine spend their days digging in rocks. You do realize the effect this has on their morale, particularly since many of them still assume you assassinated their high prince."
"I hope that their current leader has worked to disabuse them of such false notions."
Amaram finally turned to look Dalinar in the eyes. Those anger spren were still there, though his tone was crisp and militaristic.
"Bright Lord, I know you for a realist. I've modeled my career after yours. Frankly, even if you did kill him, which I know you must deny, I would respect you for it. Toril was a liability to this nation. Let me prove to you that I am not the same. Storms, Dalinar. I'm your best frontline general, and you know it. Toril spent years wasting me because my reputation intimidated him. Don't make the same mistake. Use me. Let me fight for Alethkar, not kiss the feet of Thalen merchants. I—"
"Enough," Dalinar snapped. "Follow your orders. That is how you'll prove yourself to me."
Amaram stepped back, then, after a deliberate pause, saluted. He spun on his heel and marched down into the city.
"That man," Dalinar thought.
Dalinar had intended to tell him that this island would host the front lines in the war, but the conversation had slipped from him. Well, Amaram might quickly get the fighting he wanted, a fact he would discover soon enough at the planning meeting. Boots on stone sounded behind him as a group of men in blue uniforms joined him at the rim of the plateau.
"Permission to stab him a little, sir," said Teft, a bridgeman leader.
"How do you stab someone a little, soldier?"
"I could do it," Lynn said. "I've only started training with a spear. We could claim it was an accident."
"Now, now," Lopin said. "You want to stab him a little? Let my cousin, Huyo, do it, sir. He's the expert on little things."
"Short joke,"
Huyo said in his broken Alethi.
be glad not short temper. I'm just trying to involve you, Huyo. I know that most people overlook you. It's very easy to do, you see. Attention,
Dalinar snapped, though he found himself smiling. They scrambled into ranks. Kaladin had trained them well.
You've got, Dalinar checked the clock on his arm, 37 minutes until the meeting, men, and, women. Don't be late.
They rushed off, chatting among themselves. Nivani, Yasna, and Renarin joined him soon after, and his wife gave him a sly smile as she noticed him checking his arm clock again. Storming woman had gotten him to start arriving early for appointments just by strapping a device to his arm. As they gathered, Fenn's son climbed up onto the Oathgate platform and greeted Dalinar warmly.
We have rooms for you, above the temple where we'll be meeting. We know you don't need them, since you can simply Oathgate home in an instant.
We'll take them gladly, son, Dalinar said. I could use a little refreshment and time to think.
The young man grinned. Dalinar never would get used to those spiked eyebrows. They climbed down from the platform, and a Thalen guard gave the all-clear. A scribe sent word via span reed that the next transfer could take place. Dalinar paused to watch. A minute later, a flash occurred, surrounding the Oathgate with light. The Oathgates were under almost perpetual use these days. Malata was running the device today, as was becoming her duty more often.
"Uncle?"
Yasna said as he lingered.
"Merely curious about who's coming in next."
"I could pull the records for you," Yasna said.
The new arrivals turned out to be a group of Thalen merchants in pompous clothing. They made their way down the larger ramp, surrounded by guards and accompanied by several men carrying large chests.
"More bankers," Fenn's son said. "The quiet economic collapse of Roshar continues."
"Collapse?" Dalinar said, surprised.
"Bankers all across the continent have been pulling out of cities," Yasna said, pointing. "See that fortress of a building at the front of the ancient ward down below? That's the Thalen Gemstone Reserve.
Local governments are going to have difficulty financing troops after this," Fenn's son said with a grimace. "They'll have to write here with authorized span reeds and get spheres shipped to them. It's going to be a nightmare of logistics for anyone not close to an Oathgate."
Dalinar frowned. "Couldn't you encourage the merchants to stay and support the cities they were in?"
"Sir," he replied. "Sir, force the merchants to obey military authority?"
"Forget I asked," Dalinar said, sharing a look with Nivani and Yasna.
Nivani smiled fondly at what was probably a huge social misstep, but he suspected Yasna agreed with him. She'd probably have seized the banks and used them to fund the war. Renarin lingered, watching the merchants.
"How big are the gemstones they brought?" he asked.
"Bright Lord?"
Fenn's son asked, glancing toward Dalinar for help.
"They'll be spheres. Normal spheres."
"Any larger gemstones?" Renarin asked.
He turned toward them.
"Anywhere in the city?"
"Sure, lots of them," Fenn's son said. "Some really nice pieces, like in every city. Why, Bright Lord?"
"Because," Renarin said.
He didn't say anything more. Dalinar splashed water onto his face from a basin in his rooms, which were in a villa above the Temple of Telenalot, on the top tier of the city, the Royal Ward. He wiped his face with the towel and reached out to the Stormfather.
"Feeling any better?"
"I do not feel like men. I do not sicken like men. I am,"
the Stormfather rumbled.
"I could have been destroyed, though, splintered into 1,000 pieces. I live only because the enemy fears exposing himself to a strike from cultivation."
"So she lives still, then? The third god?"
"Yes. You've met her?"
I have?"
"You do not remember, but normally she hides.
cowardice. Perhaps wisdom, Dalinar said. The Night Watcher is not her.
Yes, you've said. The Night Watcher is like you. Are there others, though?
Spren like you, or the Night Watcher? Spren that are shadows of gods? There is a third sibling. They are not with us.
In hiding?
No, slumbering.
Tell me more.
No.
But
no! Leave them alone. You hurt them enough.
Fine, Dalinar said, setting aside the towel and leaning against the window. The air smelled of salt, reminding him of something not yet clear in his mind. One last hole in his memory.
A trip by sea,
and his visit to the valley. He glanced at the dresser beside the washbasin, which held a book written in unfamiliar Thalen glyphs. A little note beside it, in Alethi glyphs, read, Pathway, King. Fen had left him a gift, a copy of The Way of Kings in Thalen.
I've done it, Dalinar said. I've united them, Stormfather. I've kept my oath and have brought men together instead of dividing them. Perhaps this can be penance in some small way for the pain I've caused.
The Stormfather rumbled in reply.
Did he care about what we felt? Dalinar asked. Honor, the Almighty. Did he truly care about men's pain?
He did. Then I didn't understand why, but now I do. Odium lies when he claims to have sole ownership of passion.
The Stonefather paused.
I remember, at the end, Honor was more obsessed with oaths. There were times when the oath itself was more important than the meaning behind it. But he was not a passionless monster. He loved humankind. He died defending you.
Dalinar found Nabani entertaining Taravangian in the common.